As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Abide in my love. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. One of the most important ways that God makes his ways known to us is revealed by the Old Testament Hebrew word hesed. This Hebrew word is translated in various ways, sometimes as mercy and sometimes as pity. And the psalm I quoted just above, "May God take pity on us and bless us," literally is, "May God have hesed on us." So it also means mercy and pity. But sometimes this word is also translated as tender-hearted or kind. The Lord is merciful and kind, says the psalmist. David says the Lord is hesed. And sometimes the word is also translated as loving. The Lord is full of love and compassion, says David. Hesed. So however you take it, it seems to be sort of an all-purpose word. And there are at least five English words, which I just said, which are used to translate it in our scriptures. Word which is rich in connotation, expressive of the powerful dimension of God's life. So where does this word hesed derive? What is its root in the Hebrew mind and in the biblical heart? It is most intriguing that the word hesed has its most primitive meaning, its original use, as describing the very special feeling a woman has for her first unborn child. In the Hebrew cosmology and their way of thinking about the world, looking at it, something happened when a woman conceived a child, something which not only gave life to the unborn, but which changed forever the life which carried it. For now, this was not a life locked into itself, locked into isolation, but now this woman was carrying within herself the gift of life generated by God. She was participating in God's creative act, sharing in the divine power and bringing forth a new human being. And as such, this woman was a special carrier and a special participant in life and in the mystery of God's own creativity. No wonder then that everything about the woman would change. We know that a woman who has conceived a child undergoes many changes, and not all of them having to do just with her womb. Indeed, her health in general is changing. We even say that her hair gets thicker, or that her face becomes radiant, and that she becomes stronger and more robust, perhaps even more self-possessed. Last winter, Father Mark Gruber, who is a monk priest at the St. Vincent Arch Abbey in Steubenville, Pennsylvania, was our Community of Hope retreat leader. He's going to also be our Holy Week preacher here at the Church of St. Michael and St. George, the Holy Week of 2011. But he tells a story, and I'll keep it in the first person because it reads better that way. And this is his story. I remember a very interesting incident. At least it was to me. A classmate of mine in college was going to enter the monastery the same year I was. But in his senior year, he fell in love with a young woman, also at college. And after they had graduated, they got married. I joined the monastery, and Ed got married. It was originally his idea to go to the monastery, not mine. He thought of it first. He gave me the idea, but he got married. At any rate, after my novitiate, Ed and his wife invited me to a restaurant for dinner, and while we were sitting there, filling in the gap of the last year, I noticed that Ed would help himself to Pam's food. He was a sort of big fellow, an athlete, and she was a little person. I guess the word is petite. She could never eat all of the food on her plate, and so ordinary had it become for him to take a little that he didn't have to ask her anymore. He just reached right over and helped himself. Well, as she was talking with me, Ed reached over and grabbed one of those little mouth-sized tomatoes in her salad. And Pam, while smiling and chatting with me, picked up her fork and pinned his wrist to the table. Even she didn't know why she was doing this. She was shocked. Ed was very upset. For suddenly his wife was drawing blood in a restaurant over a little tomato. We nervously ignored the incident and continued on with our dinner. But a couple of days later, I found out from Pam that she had gone to the doctor and learned that she was expecting her first child. She hadn't even known it then. She told her doctor that she was afraid she was going crazy because she had pinned her husband's wrist to the table the other day in the restaurant. But the doctor told her that even before she was aware of it, intellectually, her body was already responding to the mystery of the life that was conceived within her. There were already changes which were taking place, and Pam, meek and mild, was not going to let anyone deprive her unborn child of food. She was going to sustain and nourish that life. Her whole being was becoming oriented toward it indeed. Father Gruber reminds us that the ancients would have said that Pam, his friend, had hesed. She had tenderness, yes, and mercy and love and concern and compassion for that child. But she also had a great deal of fierceness and strength, a great deal of self-possession and interest in this unborn life. This word, which is used to describe such a disposition in a woman, hesed, is the word most frequently used in the Bible to describe the attitude of God toward us. So we might say that God is full of tenderness and mercy, but we might also say that he has rather fierce interests in our well-being. God is strongly focused upon us. Hesed. This hesed of God is not mere sentimentality, then. It isn't cheap grace. It comes at a great cost, and God has shown that he is willing to pay that cost to lay down his life for his friends. Hesed, in short, is the Old Testament version of grace. It's what the Old Testament said about God instead of the word grace. Grace in our New Testament is the word charis, and it is sometimes a liberal translation of the Hebrew hesed. It implies also mercy, concern, care. The word charity, our word charity, comes from the same root as charis. And intriguingly, so does the word caress come from the same root, a touch of love, a solicitous act, a drawing near, a drawing close, a powerful kind of intimacy. Hesed and charis are the prominent ways that the Old Testament and New Testament choose to describe God's care and love of us. And we must admit that they are kenotic. That is, they are self-emptying forms of love. Jesus said, "No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life." Any mother who has a child knows how self-emptying it is to conceive, to bear, to nurse, and to rear a child, how much self-emptying is required, how much one must lay down one's own life. It's beyond measure. I understand that many mothers say this, that had they known ahead of time what would have taken place, what would have been taken from them by this child, they wouldn't have thought it even possible that they could give so much. God's love is quite like that. God has given so much that we would scarcely believe it possible how much self-emptying he has exhibited towards us. Indeed, he shows to us a remarkable maternal side. The prophet Isaiah asks rhetorically, "Can a mother forget her infant? Can a woman be without tenderness for the child of her womb?" How imaginable at that time that one could forget. And the prophet says, "But even if she could forget, I will never forget you, my people," says the Lord. Through his prophet, God evidences the same kind of self-emptying concern, the same kind of focus, the same kind of fierce attentiveness. It's the nature of grace. It's the nature of divine love, hesed. The original meaning of the word charis is to shine, to be radiant. Charis is used to describe a human face as well as the sun or the moon. We've all gone to a classroom and seen Karis, the sea of shining faces of all those children, and they look up to see our shining face. They require it. They need us to beam on them. I always thought, to my cousin's denial, that I was my grandmother's favorite. I was. She told me so. My beloved grandmother used to just light up when I would walk into the room. All my life, until she died. And she waited for me to come from out of town to her bedside to look up at me and one last time light up like alabaster before she gave up and died. And God's love is something like that, I would think. We would say, as the ancients did, that the face has charis, would shine. We say the same things about faces shining, beaming. We say that they beam, and indeed they literally do. The upturned face reflects more light than the downturned one. The upturned smile reflects more light than the downturned one. There is, in fact, a slightly greater amount of moisture in a joyful face, and the moisture of the joyful face shines. The elders were so impressed with shining faces that they put oil on their faces as a kind of cosmetic. David the psalmist says, "You produce grain from the earth, O Lord, and wine to cheer men's hearts. You make oil so that their faces shine, and bread to fortify their spirits." They would anoint their faces with oil to make them shine and beam, that they might have a radiant disposition, that it would remind them to be cheerful, happy, joyful, loving, like God is. Wasn't that what the prayer of Moses implies? May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord let his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord look upon you kindly and give you his peace. Whereas the psalmist says, may God have pity on us and bless us. May he let his face shine on us. There is a special type of love for which we are all looking, and if we find it, we will live our life in that light. We will be bathed in it. We will be baptized in it. In that light, we will live and move and have our being, and our life will be so much lighter and simpler. Have you ever wondered what Jesus could possibly have meant when he said, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light"? Good grief. Didn't he realize that we would suffer and struggle? How we would have such difficulty in accomplishing good works and try to live by the gospel of Christ and the law of God? How could Jesus have ever said his yoke was easy and his burden light? Well, because for him, the yoke and the burden was living in the radiant love of his Father. As my Father has loved me, so have I loved you. St. John says he was ever at the Father's side. What an intimate phrase that is. Literally translated, it means ever pressed against the bosom of the Father. Such an energy in that. There is a power, a capacity to live meaningfully with strength and vigor if we are living in the affirmation of God, so have I loved you. In our faith, and I do this all the time with parishioners, we are anointed with oil as well. Someday, in our own infirmity, many of us will suggest to be anointed that we might reflect in our faces the light of God's face, that our flesh and our frame may flourish under God's touch, under God's grace, under God's shining face, that we might be responsive and be reborn into the love of such a hesed, such a tenderness, such a loving compassion. This is Father Mark's remembrance of being young with his parents. It's a lovely story. I remember when I was about 11 years old, my father came home from work in the afternoon. That was remarkable because in those days, with 9 children, he usually worked at 2 or even 3 jobs, and we saw him only at night. So we knew something was up when he came home that afternoon. He wasn't even dirty. So we knew that he had only worked less than half a day. He had a package in his hand. It was my parents' anniversary. They'd been married over a decade, and this was going to be the first date they had ever had since they were married. He had made a reservation at a restaurant, a nice one, and announced to my mother that they were going out. He presented her with a gift, the first anniversary gift in their decade-long marriage. It was a beautiful white dress. Most of us children, six or seven of us, waited on the porch to see what Mother would look like when she got dressed up to go out on a date with Dad. It occurred to me that she had never owned any new clothes since I had known her. All the clothes she wore were hand-me-downs or secondhand maternity garments. Those were threadbare. So this was the first time in my experience that she was to wear something store-bought and new. I even remember the Kaufman's box my father presented. I guess they were just getting on their feet. Remember, in those days, couples could get married on a song and a prayer without any financial security, without any money in the bank. They could get married and their families and society and the church would support that kind of marriage. It could work. These days, young couples must have two or three cars between them, two or three jobs between them, long education, a house and all of its proper furniture owned, as well as a lot of money in the bank, or the marriage can't even get off the ground. Times have changed, haven't they? Anyway, Mother came out after 45 minutes or so. She was all decked out. It was the first time I'd ever seen her with her hair done up and lipstick on. She had borrowed the high heels of the woman next door, and I was very impressed at what I saw. And it occurred to me for the first time that my mother was someone other than a dishwasher, a laundress, a cook, a maid, a chauffeur, and a counselor. It occurred to me that she was, after all, a woman just like we saw on TV, and I had never seen her in that light. It had never occurred to me that she shared that identity with so many others, and I was very impressed. I elbowed my little sister, Marcy, who was standing next to me, and I said, "I don't think I've ever seen her look so great." And my sister agreed with me. So my father and my mother prepared to go on their first date. But just as they were getting into the station wagon, my younger brother Matthew came running home from the baseball field where he had been playing. He was only 4 or 5 years old. He'd been hit in the face with a baseball, and he was bleeding from his nose rather profusely. He was crying, he was sweating, he was dirty, and he ran straight to my mother. I tried to intercept him, but perhaps you've had the experience of how easily children can evade us when they intend to reach their mother. He went effortlessly around me. And in the corner of my eye, as I turned, I noticed that my mother immediately got down on her knees without a moment's hesitation and gathered her boy to her heart. She whisked him into the house where she washed his face and dried his wound and cleaned him up and fed him food and calmed him down and prepared him for bed. An hour or so later, she came back out to go to her date. But now, her hair was undone, her makeup was smeared, and there was dirt and blood all over her new white dress. And I looked at my little sister and I said, "Too bad, she really looked good there for a minute." And my little sister said something I've never forgotten. She said, "I think Mummy looks better now than she did before." And I thought about that, and thought about that, being rather dense. And finally it occurred to me what she meant. My sister realized, with a graced perception, that in this condition, in this appearance, our mother radiated a greater love than when she was merely beautiful from an ordinary way of reckoning. By this gesture of self-emptying, by this gesture of self-diminishment and humility, she was ennobled and radiant for our eyes to see and appreciate. You know, when you think about it, when you think about Good Friday, or about the cross and the resurrection, shouldn't it occur to us that God has done very much the same thing for us? We come running, full of sin and hurt and pain. And God has gotten down on both knees in the incarnation of Jesus and has embraced us to himself. And when we stand back a moment to look at what became of him, it was a cross. And the crucified one that we see, his blood, our sin. This is a kind of love we can scarcely imagine in a normal and casual human way of reckoning, for this would require a graced perception. There is a light, a radiance in this kind of love which we need to rise to see. We need to look up spiritually, to look up and raise our eyes beyond the natural plane of things. For if we live in the radiance of this kind of love, we will not grow weary, we will not burn out, we will not become exhausted of our faith, of our lives. We will always be sustained. We will always be nourished, sealed, protected, raised up. For God has whisked us into the house of the church and dried our wounds. He has washed us in the waters of baptism and nourished us at his own table. God has calmed our fears. God has prepared us for bed, prepared us to meet him face to face, shining face to shining face. In all of this, God has shown us the love of a mother, the charis of grace, the heart of hesed. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Abide in my love. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. May God have pity on us and bless us. May God let his face to shine upon us. Amen.